Hey, I'm Justin, and I am grateful to have you here. Welcome to the RECO 12 speaker meeting. I am an addict, and thanks to my God, the steps, and the fellowship of other addicts like me, I'm sober since June 19th, 2015, and for that, I am beyond grateful. Welcome to the meeting again. We are an organization whose addictions include alcohol, drugs, lust and sex, food and gambling, just to name a few. We come together from all places, faiths, and backgrounds to learn the similarities of addiction and to gain tools and hope from others who are walking a similar path. We invite recovering addicts with at least 1 year sobriety and who are actively working their own recovery in their respective fellowships to share their experience, strength, and hope as our guest speakers on a live Zoom meeting each Friday at noon Central Time. That person will speak for 20 to 25 minutes on a recovery topic that is near and dear to their heart. Then we, the live audience, get the opportunity to ask questions of the speaker for another 20 to 25 minutes. In order to ask questions, if you're here live, please type them in the Q&A link at the bottom of your Zoom window. If you are hearing this podcast recorded at a later date and would like to participate as a live audience member, or if you would like to be a live guest speaker in a future meeting, please go to www.reco12.com. That's R-E-C-O-1-2.com. To learn more and submit your email address there to receive weekly invitations or to submit to become a guest speaker. RECO 12 is an ad-free service and we appreciate your help in keeping it that way. We gratefully accept contributions to help cover the cost of the Zoom platform, podcast platform, web hosting, and administrative costs. The guest speakers also choose a fellowship or recovery-centered organization to which the majority of contributions from that week's meeting will be donated to. To contribute, you can go to reco12.com/support, or you can click the link to PayPal that I will put in the chat in the live meeting in a little bit here. Or if you use Venmo, you can contribute there. Our handle is at reco-12, spelled out T-W-E-L-V-E. When you contribute, please specify the meeting number. This is meeting number 2. Last week was our first meeting with Harvey E., and it went very well. Thank you all for helping out there. If you missed hearing that one, you can still listen to it in podcast form by searching for RECO 12 Speaker Meeting Podcast on virtually any podcast platform you use, or you can go to RECO 12 website and find it under the link podcast. Now let's introduce our guest speaker for today, Cameron F. His topic will be along the lines of answering the question, are all addictions the same? Now our speaker has been a member of Cocaine Anonymous since November 21st, 2003. As a Big Book sponsor, he has worked with all kinds of addicts from around the world. He facilitates a 12 steps in 4 workshop and has carried the 12-step message of recovery to some 2,200 suffering addicts over the past 16 years. His recovery message, it only takes a day to learn the 12-step program and the rest of your life to practice it. He is currently the archivist for the Southern Ontario area of Cocaine Anonymous and the archive chair for CA World Services out of Los Angeles, California, which, by the way, is the organization that Cameron has chosen to have contributions go to. Please welcome our guest speaker, Cameron F. from Toronto, Ontario. The floor is yours, Cameron. You have 20 to 25 minutes.
So thank you, Justin. Thank you for the invitation to speak. And it's a topic that I like to speak on and have gained a fair amount of experience with over the years. So the question is are all addictions the same? And of course, the answer to that is yes, they are. They are different. We have alcoholism, we have drug addiction, we have gambling, sex, food, codependence, cutting, and the list goes on. I think there's some 300 different kinds of 12-step fellowships that have all been spawned from the original 12-step program written by AA back in 1939. Our behavior patterns do vary depending on the nature of our addiction. But what I want to speak mostly about today is to the notion that, yes, all addictions are different. However, the problem is the same for all addictions, and the solution is the same for all addictions. So that's what I want to speak mainly about today. I'm what's called a Big Book sponsor. I use the Big Book as my recovery text. I like the way the Big Book is written. It's written like an instruction manual, and it's a fairly effective instruction manual for recovery from, in my opinion, any and all addictions. And one of my favorite passages in the Big Book is the Jaywalker story, where they put forth the analogy of a jaywalker and all the absurd behavior that goes with the jaywalker and how much they love to jaywalk and all the problems that go with it. And of course, at the end of the analogy, they say, you know, if you were to substitute jaywalking for alcoholism or alcohol, it would make perfect sense. Well, I like to posit the notion that if you substitute jaywalking for not only alcohol, but for drugs or gambling or sex or food or cutting or lust or fantasy or emotions or whatever the addictive pattern may be, it reads just as well. So, you know, all, as I said, all addictions, they all have the same problem. They have all the same same solution. You know, I'm a drug addict, alcoholic, yet I've worked quite effectively with all kinds of other addicts. How is that possible when I don't even share their particular addiction pattern? And what I hope to do here today in the next 20 minutes is to share with you all a way of identifying with any and all kinds of addictions in a manner that's effective, that we can win their confidence and show them how to recover from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. So the key to this is, of course, identification. And we often hear in the room, oh, only an alcoholic with an alcoholic, drug addict with a drug addict, sex addict with a sex addict. And I get that. I understand why they say those things, but it's not absolutely necessary. And there's some certain universals to approaching any and all addictions that I have found to be quite effective. Now, to be able to do this, first thing is that our message that we're carrying to the other addict has to have depth and weight. You know, we have to have some kind of identification. Hey, you're like me and I'm like you. And again, what I love about the Big Book, that it gives specific instructions on how we should approach the addict and what it is that we share. On page 92 of our Big Book, it says, tell the newcomers, tell them enough about your drinking, using, or your acting out habits, symptoms, and experiences, and encourage them to speak to themselves. I'm going to share some stuff with you about what I was like. They're going to share with me what they're like. And then I'm going to tell them how baffled I am, how I learned that I was sick. I was sick in my mind. I was sick in my body. It goes on to say, give them an account of the struggles, what I call the failed strategies that you made to stop. And then to show the newcomer how the mental twist and what I like to refer to as this lie that lives in my head leads to me always to that first drink, that first drug, or that first act or thought that sets my addiction into motion. So identification plays a key part. And as I said, behavior patterns vary. So even within a particular addiction, they vary. As an alcoholic, alcoholics vary in their addiction patterns. I'm an everyday drinker. I like hard liquor, but there are binge drinkers, there are weekend warriors, there are wine drinkers, there are beer drinkers. In the drug world, I'm an intravenous cocaine user. So if I'm sitting down with, let's say, a marijuana addict, and I'm trying to identify about sticking needles in my arm, you know, they're going to look at me like I got three bloody heads on, thinking, you know, that's not their story. They can't relate. You know, I hear a lot in the rooms, you know, how people prostitute themselves, how they've lived on the streets, how they've been to jail. And when I hear those types of identifying approaches, you know, I don't have that experience. That's not my experience as an addict. So then my twist of thinking kicks into gear and I think, well, that's not me. Maybe I'm not an addict. Maybe I've been deluding myself. I just had the willpower to stop and I've been stopped. And I think now it's time to go prove that I can go to the local bar and have a bourbon and a cold beer and just show the world that I'm in charge. You know, that's the way my mind works. So identification is a key component to winning the confidence and arming the newcomer with the facts about themselves. Now, there's a passage in the doctor's opinion that I think is very appropriate, very adept at explaining what the addiction pattern looks like. And this pattern of addiction plays out, as I said, with any and all addictions. It's in the doctor's opinion on page 28, Roman numeral 28, where it says, men and women drink, use, act out, essentially, because they like the effect. You got to ask yourself, do you like the effect? Every addiction has a certain physiological component to it. Even codependents, when they act out in a codependent way, certain chemicals are released, certain stressors come into play, and they get into that. They like that. The rageaholic. You know, when I'm in a murderous rage, there's a certain sense of power that I like. The adrenaline's kicking in. You know, I'm prepared to do practically anything in that kind of a state of mind. So I understand the physiological reactions that go on. Gamblers, too, when they start placing bets, there's a physiological reaction that goes on. And, of course, as alcoholics and drug addicts, we all know the power and the efficacy of the substance that we like to use and abuse. So the first thing is, I like the effect. Now, sometimes the prospect will say, well, no, I don't like it. But what they're really saying is, I don't like all the consequences that go with it. But I do like the effect that I get when I smoke crack cocaine or inject cocaine or do heroin or smoke dope or drink or whatever. Now, the passage goes on to say that the sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, meaning, can I admit that my consumption or my acting out is injurious to my life, injurious to other people's life? And most people that I work with that have a problem, yeah, they can admit that it's injurious. They cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. Now, the Big Book refers to it as a mental twist, that mental blank spot, that strange phenomenon that parallels our sound reasoning. I like to refer to it as a liar. I got this liar that lives in my head. And the thing that I try to convey to the newcomer is, I love the effect produced by drinking and drugs. And that liar loves the effect, and it doesn't want to give it up. So what it's done is it's built this research and development annex in my brain and employed thousands of technicians working on new ideas, new excuses, new justifications, new reasons why this time when I do it, it's going to be okay. And the problem here, and this is the problem that's universal amongst all addicts, is the liar always wins the argument. And I pick up the first drink, or I do that first drug, or I have that first thought or that first act, and it sets me out. There's another universal aspect to addicts. To them, their addict life seems the only normal one. It's normal for me to be altered in my mind. Being straight is not normal. I have a certain baseline of how I experience the world. It goes on to say they're restless, irritable, discontented. I like to add to that list, we're bored, we're depressed, we're anxious. And these are symptoms of a malady that I experience. And I don't like feeling that way. So I seek a solution to my problem. See, drinking and using wasn't the problem. That was my solution. Running out's a problem, but drinking and using was my solution. So I could again experience that sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once. When I smash cocaine or drink bourbon or smoke really good dope, I get present to the power of that substance. I love the effect. It pushes whatever going on in my life, and I just get present to its power. It's like an old friend coming over for a visit. Why did I ever quit? You know, this is exactly the way I want to feel, and then I'm off again, right? And it's problematic because I see other people doing it with impunity. They do it without consequence. My wife can have a drink. She gets that warm and fuzzy feeling I get. But then, for her, she gets kind of nauseous. She doesn't like the sleepiness that comes with it, and she stops. Now, I never got that experience when I drank. I love drinking. It's like, wow, this is exactly the way I want to be, and I want to be this way 24/7. And drugs, it was even better. So I see others do it, and I think my mind tries to convince me, well, I should be able to do it like her. But my experience tells me something different. It goes on to say, after they succumb to the desire again, as so many do, and I would succumb to the desire again and again. And then here's another universal pattern to all addictions. There's this phenomenon of craving. Now, this is the body allergy. This is a physiological component. I like the way my body is reacting to this drug or substance or behavior. And, you know, but it goes from being that luxury that I once entertained where I could take it or leave it. And now it became something that I absolutely needed to do. And when I would do it, I couldn't predict what that was going to look like. I couldn't predict what, you know, I'd like to say I'm just going to go to the bar, have a shot of bourbon and cold beer, but I could never always predict that outcome. Sometimes I could, but more often than not, I ended up drinking and drinking, and then I'd be calling the dealers and all hell would be breaking loose. So this phenomenon of craving develops, and I go out on what they call the stages of a spree, where I can't predict the consumption. It's going to run its course. And then at some point, could be a day, a week, a month, a year or more, I emerge from the spree full of remorse and horror and hopelessness. And I think, oh my God, I can't go on like this. I've got to stop. And I make a firm resolution not to do it again. And you talk to anyone who's got a problem with addiction, whatever the addiction may be, they can all relate to that pattern of behavior and certainly making that firm resolution not to do it again. And I often say that, you know, if we were to be hooked up the lie detector tests at this juncture, I think it would register for truthful as everybody. We really do mean it with all our resolve. We don't want to do it anymore. But because I don't know how to live without the booze, the drugs, or the acting out behavior, and I can't live with it, you know, I get stuck and I start to dry out. I get into what I call sobriety. And because I don't have a solution to live without booze, drugs, or acting out behavior, I start experiencing the symptoms again of my malady. I get restless, irritable, discontented, bored, depressed. And next thing you know, I'm succumbing to the desire again. I'm putting another drink, drug, or behavior into gear, and I'm off on another spree, followed by more remorse, followed by another resolution, and round I go on that wheel of misfortune, pursuing it to the gates of insanity or death. And this is, as it says, this is repeated over and over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there's very little hope for the recovery, which is a pretty ominous conclusion. And I'm not really quite sure what the spiritual experience they're talking about entails, but, you know, that's the solution to our predicament, and that's something that steps 2 to 12 handle quite well. So the question is, you know, what are some of these universal experiences we have with all addictions? So I use this analogy because you look at step one. Step one says, I admit I'm powerless over alcohol, drugs, or my acting out behavior, and my life has become unmanageable. What does that really mean? How do I know I'm powerless? How do I know the person I'm working with is powerless? Are they clear that they're powerless or not? And then what does it mean by this unmanageability? What is an unmanageable life look like? So I use this analogy where I talk about addicts are like men and women who are drowning, and we know we're drowning, and we're desperate for some kind of power to keep our head above water. So we notice floating on the surface these logs, and I think, you know what, I'll swim to the log, I'll hold on to the log, and I'll keep my head above water, and I won't drown. But when I reach the log, if you ever picked up a log that's been in the water a long time, it kind of gets a slimy coat to it. It's slippery. So as a power, I might be able to hold on for a day, a week, a month, a year, maybe a little longer, but at some point, the log fails me as a power. So when I'm working with a prospect and I'm trying to convey to them what it means for me to be powerless, that I am powerless over drugs and alcohol, are you powerless, right? I start to tease out all these failed strategies. I give them an account of the struggles I made to stop. And I call this the log list. And I tease out my logs, and I get them to share about what logs they can identify with too. You know, the first log that goes is the willpower log, followed by resolutions, oaths, promises, contracts, controlled using and drinking, harm reduction, substitution strategies. I got off the needle by swearing I'd only drink. Then I became alcoholic, so I switched to smoking marijuana. Marijuana lasted about 5 years, but I got bored with the dope. Next thing you know, I'm back on the, you know, the cocaine and back into the booze again. Substitution strategy, being really sick or ill health. You know, that never kept me permanently sober. Ominous warnings from a doctor. You know, I remember my doctor saying, Cameron, you got liver disease. Your liver's distended, your enzymes are through the roof, you're going to die if you keep drinking. And when I heard that news, the first thought that crossed my mind was, I need a drink right now. Ominous warnings failed to hold me in check. I don't think ominous warnings from the judge or a lawyer or an employer are any more effective either. change of environment, trigger lists, avoiding people, places, and things. I moved from Toronto back to Burlington, my hometown, to get away from the dealers and the drinking and all that, and was quite disappointed to find out they had bars and dealers in Burlington. Then we try, I've tried things like counseling, therapy, group therapy. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of therapy for certain mental, emotional issues, but I've never, and I find it very helpful, but I've never found it efficacious in dealing with my addiction. You know, detox treatment centers. I used to do spiritual retreats. That was my way of trying to detox and sober up. And for a couple of weeks, I'd feel great, but because I really don't know how to live with it or without it, you know, I get restless, irritable, discontented again, and then I'm back out. War stories. You know, we've all heard the war stories. Heck, my own war story doesn't keep me sober. You think your war story is going to keep me sober? Fear and the horror of, you know, what addiction can bring. Relationships, friends, spouse, children, family, sex, pregnancy. I've seen these strategies all tried to be employed, but I've not given the addict any permanent solution. Now, once I was doing this workshop where I do 12 steps in 4 hours, and I'm going through this log list, and one of the participants took great umbrage and stood up and said, "This is really wrong. All of these strategies are very effective. Why would you be so, you know, disparaging about them?" And I got to thinking about that, and, you know, she was right. These strategies, these that I'm laying out here, they do have some power to them, but they do not have the power or the guarantee to keep me permanently sober. And I don't know about you, but I need permanent sobriety in my life. Another relapse is going to be a death sentence. So I need a solution that works, not just temporary reprieve from the drinking or using. So I find that these logs, they're kind of diluting. They seem to have power, but they always failed me in the end. I've tried getting pets and being responsible to animals, church and prayer. I've tried the going to meetings, 90 meetings, 90 days, yesterday's spiritual experience. Ever try staying sober or ever try staying high on yesterday's crack run? I got to buy new crack every day, right? Well, it's the same thing with the yesterday's spiritual experience isn't going to keep me sober either. Self-help books, development courses, recovery knowledge, reading my big book, intelligence, education, frothy emotional appeals, interventions, positive thinking, poetry, right? Reading poetry in the rooms, good days, bad days. When's the best day to get high? Every day, right? Keeping busy, having money, having no money, memory strategies, you know, remember when, think, play the tape all the way through. They seem to make sense, but why can't I play the tape all the way through? Why can't I remember when? Because the liar is running the show, and the liar always wins the argument. I always remember when after the fact. Jail and incarceration, good reasons to stop, strong reasons, consequences, moral and philosophical convictions, behavioral modification, suffering, humiliation, pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization, exercise, holistic medicine, acupuncture, and the list goes on and on. So as I'm sharing these failed strategies of which I tried, they're sharing there with me, yeah, I tried that, yeah, that didn't work. Well, I haven't tried that, but I don't think it's going to work. And we begin to develop an identification. We begin to develop a rapport. Now, notice I don't go into all the behavior. I go into the failed strategies, right? Because what I've learned by working with so many different kinds of addicts, like a universal, all addicts burn the same logs. All addicts go through these various strategies and fail to stay permanently abstinent or sober from their addiction pattern. So we begin to realize that, hey, I am like you. And you're saying, yeah, I'm like you too, Cameron. But the difference is you don't do it anymore. And that starts to present a compelling picture to the man or the woman who wants to stop whatever it is that's problematic for them. So I find teasing out a log list is very effective as a sponsor. As I tease it out, it gives me a very clear idea of just how powerless the prospect I'm working with is. And it helps to crystallize for the prospect just how powerless they are. And that's to our advantage. Now, the second part of step one is the unmanageability, because the first part is not why I came into the rooms. People say, Cameron, are you an addict? I go, you're damn right I'm an addict. Now let's go get high. What drove me in the rooms was the second part of step one, the unmanageability, the pain and suffering, which I call a loser list, because I am on a losing streak. I am pursuing my addiction to the gates of insanity or death. And think about how many people you know that have died as a result of their addiction. You got it. It's a death sentence. People will pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. And even insanity or death are not a deterrent. So I look at, I ask the person, are you a loser? And many of the times they take umbrage with that. They think that's rather a rude and blunt thing to say. I said, well, let's look at the record. What have you lost as a result of your addiction? And I go through the list, time, family, spouse, children, friends, money, your home, your health, your safety, hygiene, your opportunities, careers, jobs, licenses, education, quality of life, hope, intelligence, your mental acuity, your self-respect, respect from others, self-esteem, self-confidence, self-improvement, self-control, emotional security, responsibility for and to, volition and agency, reputation, freedom, morality, spirituality, peace of mind, sanity, faith, humanity, right? And we're checking them off. We're checking all the things off. And again, we're identifying, hey, that I've lost that. I've lost that too. You've lost that. Yeah, I've lost that too. And we begin to see a message that we share and identify with one another that has depth and weight. And the one thing I love about the loser list is all addicts, regardless of their addiction, lose the same things and pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. And many do die. And those are the big losers of the program. And it's unnecessary because there is a way out. And when I work with the prospect and through the loser list, I'm able to really get a strong indication of how grave the situation is for them, how much urgency is really at hand that we find a solution to our lack of power. Because based on the log list, I'm powerless. Based on the loser list, I will die. So I can diagnose myself so effectively with those two questions in the opening chapter to We Agnostics. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, the question to ask is, do you honestly want to stop drinking, using, or acting out? And if the answer is yes, well, based on your log list, have you been able to stay stopped? And the answer is no. Then if when drinking, using, or acting out, do you exhibit little control when doing that? And if the answer is yes, congratulations, you're one of us, right? And you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience can conquer. And then we can bring them to that step one question where we take step one. We learn that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were addicts. Are you willing to fully concede the fact that you're an addict based on your log and loser list? And if the answer is yes, well, then we can give them the bad news. Congratulations, you're going to die. Now, that's the bad news, and we don't want to leave them there. We do want to give them the good news, and the good news is there is a way out. What I love about a log and loser list, though, is it properly arms the prospect with the facts about themselves, regardless of their addictive pattern. And that's how I'm able to win the confidence of other addictions, even though I don't share them. Because we all burn the same logs, we all lose the same thing, and we get this rapport and identification going, and they realize, I've got something that they want, and we can start that amazing journey. And that's where I give them the good news, that there is a solution. There is a way out. And what I love about our program is that, strange as it may seem to those who do not understand, once the psychic change occurs, there again, they're alluding to the solution. The very same person who seemed doomed, who seemed such a loser, who had so many problems, ever despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds themselves able to easily control their desire for drugs or alcohol or their acting out. The only effort necessary is they follow a few simple rules, which a lot of us here in Southern Ontario call the big book, our recipe, our solution for addiction. And I'm for that. How about you? And God bless. Thank you so much, Justin.
Awesome, Cameron. That was great. I really love the way you talk about the inner liar, the liar in my head. And we may get to that here in the questions and answers. Before we get to the questions and answers, though, I'd like to give you about 60 seconds to explain the organization you're choosing to have any contributions go to, Cocaine Anonymous World Services in Los Angeles. So tell us a little bit about it and why you chose it.
All right. Well, I started off with AA, and AA is a wonderful program, but they have a very specific primary purpose, and sometimes it's problematic to talk about other addictions. When I came into Cocaine Anonymous, what I loved about Cocaine Anonymous is step one, admitted I was powerless over cocaine and all other mind-altering substances. So it's a very broad program of abstinence from anything mind-altering. And here, I don't know about other areas in Cocaine Anonymous, but here in Southern Ontario, we have a really great energy in our rooms. We all identify as addicts, and we even get other addictions coming into our rooms seeking a solution because Cocaine Anonymous embraces the big book as its recovery text. And most people in Southern Ontario, most of the meetings in Southern Ontario are big book sponsorship-focused meetings. So I really love that. And we're very open to being supportive to anyone who's got an addictive problem, that we're there to be as helpful as we possibly can. So I really love the fellowship of Cocaine Anonymous. We don't word police people and say, you got to use this word versus that word. We just want to be able to help you find a power greater than yourself that restore you to sanity. And that's why I'm such a fan of Cocaine Anonymous, and I've been a member of Cocaine Anonymous my 17th year of being a trusted servant in the fellowship. It's a great thing to be a part of. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks, Cameron. So if you're feeling a desire to contribute to that cause, you can use the links in the chat or check us out at rico12.com/support. Now it's time for Cameron to answer your questions. Remember, if you have a question for him, please type it in the Q&A link at the bottom of your Zoom screen. And I've received a few, and we'll get started on these and get as many of them as we can in the next 20 or so minutes. So the first question, Cameron, comes from Jesse. He says, hi, Cameron. Although I agree with you that the solution to all addictions are the same, don't you think that 12-step fellowships benefit from the concept of a singleness of purpose so that the newcomer, who may not understand this, who is a chemical substance addict, will be able to identify to those sharing in a meeting? Also, to prevent the 12-step fellowship from falling into historical lesson we can take from the Oxford group and the Washingtonians, etc., basically trying to do too much and be all things to all people. And he says, P.S., good to see you, Cameron.
And it's always good to have Jesse. I've known Jesse a while, and he's a really great member of CA. Yeah, I agree 100% with you, Jesse. I really do. The reason I took on this subject the way I did is very often, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, we may be working with someone with a primary addiction around alcohol or drugs, but I'm finding less and less people having a pure application on one particular substance. Some of them have gambling problems, drug problems, nicotine problems, whatever. And so I find that taking this approach with any and all addictions helps to identify with them on whatever problems they're experiencing. Ideally, yeah, when I work, if a sex addict comes to me and there's no one else for them to work with, I will work with them. But I would much prefer to hook them up with an actual sex addict or a love addict or, emotions addict or a gambler or what have you. So I agree 100%. It's a much stronger identification when you're right there on one, drug addict with a drug addict. But as I said, behavior patterns vary. If you think about Cocaine Anonymous, all mind-altering substances, should a needle user work with a marijuana smoker? So, we start splitting hairs. But I agree, we don't want to diffuse our message and try and do too much for too many. That's why there's over 300 different fellowships. So it's a good question, and I hope I've answered it somewhat succinctly. Thanks, Jesse.
Thank you, Cameron. I appreciate that. Next question. You mentioned the term sobriety. Explain that a little more, and then how can we recognize when we are slipping into this term that you, I don't know if you coined it or not, but sobriety?
Well, in step four, it talks about when we overcome the spiritual malady, we straighten out mentally and physically. So, we understand our spiritual malady is selfishness, self-centeredness. And, when I'm in that zone, I'll experience the symptoms that go with that. However, if I overcome my selfish, self-centered attitude and I have a life of being unselfish and helpful to others, then I don't get those symptoms. I don't get restless. I don't get irritable. I don't get discontented. I don't, you know, and my mind and body straighten out. But so many people I find come into the rooms thinking going to meetings is the solution. And it's not. It's part of the equation, but it's not the solution. And I get a lot of people in the rooms thinking, I got to go to a meeting, call my sponsor every day, share where I'm at today, share my feelings, share my issues, you know, whatever it may be. But they have no real way of living without booze, drugs, or acting out behavior. So they get stuck between those two worlds. And because they're untreated, they start to experience those symptoms of restlessness, irritability, discontentedness, boredom, depression, anxiety. This is what sobriety brings out, the untreated dry drunk. And one of two things happen. They either succumb to the desire again and relapse, or they go insane. And that's why in the Oxford Handbook to Psychiatry, it talks about alcoholism and suicide in the rooms of 12 steps, which are 80 times higher than normal society. 80 times higher. I had to read the stat twice. I was so gobsmacked by it. 80 times higher. They go nuts and they take their own lives with 5, 10, 15 years sobriety because they're insane. That's what I mean by sobriety. Page 52 of the big book, sometimes referred to as the bedevilments, is a pretty apt description of what a dry drunk looks like.
Thank you for that. Now, the restlessness, irritability, and discontentedness, these are things. I mean, I was talking to somebody here recently with several years. I think he had about four years sobriety, and he was really struggling with kind of a block, and there was a lot of restlessness, irritability, and discontentedness. We know the solution. It's a step two solution, but what do you do when you come into somebody with several years sobriety who is in sobriety and really going insane at that point?
Well, I always take a look at, first of all, do they know how to work a program? So I always ask, when was the last time you did all 12 steps? When was the last time you took someone through the steps? Now, if they know how to work a 12-step program, but they're living this way, something's off the mark, right? So I'll do some probing questions, usually on steps, four to nine. You know, is there something on your inventory you never discussed? Something that's gnawing away at you? Some dark cranny of the past that needs to be dragged into light? Is there a restitution you won't make? Have you done all your step nine amends wherever possible? Is there a wrong relationship in your life that you won't give up? Is there someone you won't forgive in your life? Is there a habit or an indulgence other than the obvious one that you won't give up? Often with men, when I work with them, it could be smoking, could be pornography, gambling, you know, whatever habit or indulgence that's not necessarily conducive to a spiritual way of life. Are you living in the disciplines daily of 10 and 11? You know, constantly smashing and re-smashing the ego through the inventory process. Always course correcting. Am I living in my character defects of column 4? Or am I embodying the spiritual principles illuminated in my 5th column of what should I do instead? How can I set matters straight? So I usually tackle the sobriety from that standpoint. If they haven't worked a program, I worked with a fellow in Manchester, England. He was in NA, and he was 7 years dry sober and ready to blow his brains out because he was completely insane. And in that case, he really did not understand nor work a 12-step program. So I took him through the program. And to this day, he's still sober, and he sponsors people through the big book all across England this day. And what a miracle to behold.
That's really neat. So you do run into a lot of people who have fairly long-term sobriety. They have some sobriety under their belt, but they still have never worked the steps. And they're just basically white-knuckling it all the way through that time, huh?
White-knuckling it. In fact, with the COVID situation, I have one of my friends who's in the St. Catharines, Niagara area. He claims they've lost 8 members of AA to suicide because they can't go to their meetings. Because that's their life, that's their program, right? And that's sad.
Yeah, it really is sad. And you mentioned that earlier, that meetings are great, but that's not where the healing lies. Am I interpreting that correctly in what you said earlier? Tell us a little bit more about that.
I go to meetings for two reasons. One, to reach out to people that are in need of help, who are suffering, and offer a solution. And the camaraderie of people like Jesse. You know, I love seeing Jesse. It's the fellowship I crave, you know. And I look for people like that for the camaraderie, that we're all on the same page. We reinforce one another's morale, that the solution is really working. We bear witness and testament to each other that the program is at the play. So those are the reasons I go to a meeting. And I go to a fair number of meetings, even more so now that, you know, the Zoom platform is here. I've done more meetings in the last 20 days than I have in the last 3 years. Like, it's been amazing.
It is really neat. I've experienced the same thing in the last few months. I've got one more question here, and unless any other questions come in, we'll have this be the wrap-up question and give you some closing remarks there if you'd like to have them. The last question is referring to the liar that you referenced there, my liar. You said the liar always wins the argument. So what is the key to keeping the liar at bay when he starts creeping in there and telling me lies?
Well, there are several different tools that we have to curtail and defeat the liar. First is our flimsy read of the program, a power greater than ourselves, a connection to a higher state of consciousness. Rigorous application of the spiritual principle of honesty, to be rigorously honest. If we're going to defeat the liar, then honesty seems to be the key spiritual principle to embody. Employing the tools of my program, you know, to practice step three. I'm no longer in charge. God is my director. God is the employer. I am the agent. I'm the employee. I've got a job description to do. Inventories help keep me honest with myself, to look at where am I at? Am I living in a character defect, or am I employing the spiritual principle? You know, turning my thoughts always to being helpful to others. Because when I focus on Cameron, like anybody, if I focus on me too long, there's always something I'm losing or something I'm not getting enough of. And because it's an overt, self-centered, selfish focus, I start experiencing my symptoms. I get restless, irritable, discontented, you know, depressed, bored, whatever. And then the liar comes out of remission and says, hey, we need a solution. And my solution is to drink or to use, right? So it's by rigorous application of our steps, our daily program of action, that keeps the liar in remission. I'm not cured. I just put the liar in remission. And it stays in remission so long as I have a life of being of service and helpfulness to others. It's like Zig Ziglar used to say, you can get everything you want in life just by helping others get what they want. I really love that statement, and I've really found that to be the case. When I focus on your sobriety, Justin, to be helpful to you, to be a servant to you, my sobriety always gets taken care of out of left field. I don't know why it works that way. It just does.
Yeah, I agree. And one more question came in about the artwork you chose in the background. Curious as to the art of it and why you chose it.
One of my favorite movies is Devil's Advocate with Al Pacino and Keanu Reeves and Charlize Theron. And Al Pacino plays character Milton, who's actually Satan. And he has this gorgeous, just the office alone. It's such a man's office in his penthouse. And this sculpture, which I believe is one of the museums now, this sculpture was the sculpture he had behind his desk, and it's just such an awesome looking piece, and I just thought, what a great virtual backdrop for my Zoom platform.
All right, very good. Well, thank you, Cameron. Do you have any closing remarks before we close this down here?
I remember what my sponsor told me very early. He said, Cameron, lots of fours and fives, lots of eights and nines. Watch out for your brothers and sisters in the rooms. Business is booming. The real magic of the program is in sponsoring others. All the efficacy, all the power of the program is availed to us and through us by focusing on carrying the message to those that still suffer and working our program, because obviously we can't transmit something we don't have. And and to continue trudging that happy road of destiny. It really is quite happy, and it's an amazing thing to be a part of. So God bless the good works that you do, Justin, and the good works I know some of the men and women do on this channel right now. And we'll see you out there on the recovery firing lines.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Cameron. I really appreciate your time. Okay, so that was a very nice and great RICO 12 weekly speaker meeting for all addicts and those wanting to learn more about addiction and the recovery therefrom. If we didn't get to your question or you have other questions, please go to RICO12.com/forum and join our community and ask those questions and answer others' questions that will come up. I invite the audience to come back next week. We have another great speaker. It's going to be John, who's an alcoholic. And he's got a lot of recovery, and he has a great story. If you have not yet gone to RICO12.com and submitted your email address, you only need to do it once. Please get on the invitation list so that you can join us live each Friday at noon Central Time. Now, if you'd like to join me in the third step prayer to launch us off into the rest of today, please do so now. God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, so that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. Amen. Keep coming back, guys. It works if you work it, so work it. You're worth it. Have a fantastic day, everybody. Thanks again, Cameron.
Fight the good fight, still searching for glimmers of